Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a Highland canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, down to Monterey.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. It is Thursday evening. It is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we're ready for one more hour of the Jumble Justice Radio Show. Thank you, Audrey. We couldn't do it without you. We say that many times, and it is the truth. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network and this show called Jumble Justice. Tonight, I think we're going to have fun. We're going to, again, take some of the speakers from C-SPAN. And C-SPAN just recorded the Conservative Political Action Conference here in June. And they had a panel on firearms. You know, it's a subject that's close to my heart. I haven't fired a gun since I lived in Texas a very long time ago. But anyway, I have a book called With Liberty and Guns for All, edited and written by Keith Haley. So anyway, check that thing out if you ever have time. But they have a very interesting conference, and the people, I'll say it very quickly, they're going to be talking tonight, are Sandy Adams. She's a former U.S. representative from Florida. She spent one session in the House of Representatives, and she was a cop herself for 17 years. And she is a very interesting person to listen to. And then we're going to have David Clark, who is the elected sheriff of Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, a very interesting guy, and he's going to be talking about guns and citizens and safety and keeping the community safe. And then we're going to hear Emily Miller, and you've probably heard of Emily. Emily's the woman that wrote the book, what's it called, Emily Gets Her Gun, Get Your Gun, after like Annie Gets Your Gun. But she had been the victim of a crime in the Washington, D.C. area, and decided to get into the subject, and she is good. She is good on the topic. She'll show you that gun ownership is up like 40% and over the last 20 years, and crime is down substantially. So anyway, it's an interesting subject, and we won't spend a lot of time on news tonight, but I've got news about guns. And of course, you've heard that we still have a border that's pretty easy to cross in the southern part of the United States, Texas and Arizona. And my gosh, our Congress is going on vacation tomorrow, and they still haven't done anything about it. The president hasn't, but I think it sounds like he's going to do something. But anyway, we'll have some news about that that also. I want to thank the rest of the folks with us now. Mike Sorrento, Lucy Spears, of course, they help us out too. And what we try to do for the show is discuss interesting issues and events and developments when they happen, and in the field of criminal justice. And you'll actually hear people tonight talk about Criminal Justice. The show is dedicated to those energetic and tireless police, court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States. I say that every week for a century probably, but you know, these are people that do, I kind of hated the term myself, put your life on the line every night, but you never know. You never know, any call, the most innocent of call, you can be taking a bike theft and somebody else thinks you're there for some other reason, and you know, the worst things can happen. And I've had friends that have passed away in the line of duty also. So we need to thank them and be grateful that they're willing to do that. And it's not everyone who can do it. And the process, of course, is very selective in who gets to be a cop. Well, you're on Blog Talk Radio. I say this every week, but just remember that you can have your own show. Any person, any interest group, any organization can have their own show. You can sign up and literally within 10 minutes be broadcasting worldwide in streaming audio to an unlimited number of listeners. So think about that as we go through the show tonight. You may want to get your own show. Okay, we got a blind joke tonight, I think. Oh, this one's about fishing. Yeah, I love fishing as long as I don't have to use bait because I'd throw them back in anyway. Here it is. Here's our blonde joke for the night. Three blondes are sitting by the side of a river holding fishing poles. Their lines are in the water, of course. A game warden comes by and taps them on the shoulder and says, "Excuse me, ladies, I'd like to see your fishing licenses." "We don't have any," replied the first blonde. "Well, if you're going to fish, you need fishing licenses," says the game warden. But the officer replied, the second bond, "We aren't fishing. We all have magnets at the end of our lines, and we're collecting debris off the bottom of the river." The game warden lifted up all the lines, and sure enough, there were horseshoe magnets tied on the end of each line. "Well, I know of no law against that," he said. "Take all the debris you want." And with that, he took off. As soon as the game warden was out of sight, The three blondes started laughing hysterically. "What a dumb fish cop," the second blonde said to the other two. "Doesn't he know that there are steelhead trout in this particular river?" Steelhead trout, get it? Magnets, okay, you got it. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, since this is a firearms night, we do want you to hear a counterposition on carrying and possessing firearms, and here's what the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms wants you to hear.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
I wish the Ohio Coalition would mention how many people each year actually use a firearm in the state of Ohio to ward off a felon. But anyway, let's have a green tip. Don't you think we need one of those too? I know we do. And here's our green tip for tonight. Gather your family and buckets of water together and wash your car in the driveway if your town ordinances allow it. I'll use some biodegradable soap and then count how many buckets of water it takes to wash your car. Don't use the hose to spray the car unless you really have to. In other words, you're not going to be running that awful hose. You know, you're not going to be doing that. So, boy, that is a great green tip, right? Right? Oh, yes, it is. Okay, all right. All right, we have a green tip every week, of course. So let's get to the news real quick and see what we can get through on that. And we want to have plenty of time to hear these really fine speakers discuss the issue of carrying concealed firearms and possessing firearms on the part of citizens in all kinds of environments. Okay, here we go on some news. Let's start out with this one. I thought this was really something. It's almost like it's not true. Is it true? The federal government is now shipping unaccompanied minors. These are ones that came over the border from Honduras, Guatemala, who knows where they come from. They are now shipping them to the paradise of the Pacific. Immigration attorneys in Hawaii tell me at least 8 illegals have been dropped off in their state, and they've been told to expect more. In other words, you come across our border, you not only get fed, you eventually get to go to school, you'll get everything else that everybody else gets, but now you're going to live in Hawaii, which most of us couldn't afford to do, probably, one way or another. He said, we're happy. We have lots of attorneys happy to take these cases pro bono if they need it, says Claire Hanutz, chairperson of Hawaii's chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. If they can't afford representation, we will definitely find someone that can take their case. So isn't that interesting? Illegal immigrants coming across the border and ending up in Hawaii. Most of us can't even afford a vacation to go there. Here's some stories about, I won't go into this in detail, but a game warden hit with a rock in the head while he's trying to seize a raft down on the border on the Rio Grande. Police officer wounded in an hour-long standoff with a gang member wanted for murder. Criminal spewing obscenities and death threats at local cops before asking for and receiving medical treatment. Can you believe that? This is a weekly report distributed by a Texas state agency to senior law enforcement officials, and it paints a grim picture of the Mexican border, where authorities regularly confront illegal immigrant members. We think they're just sort of kids coming across. Of course, 70% plus are not. They're above the age of 18. The most recent Border Operations Sector Assessment Report compiled by the Texas Department of Public Safety talks about all these different things that these gang members do. They carry millions of dollars worth of marijuana, cocaine, and methamphetamine, some of which is found in vehicles with biblical passages and religious items, to hide them, of course, to hide it. Federal agents being assaulted and shot at, gang members brazenly approaching people in their homes, and ranch workers witnessing men crossing into the U.S. wearing camouflage and carrying long guns and automatic weapons. Is that too much? I mean, don't we need to do something? In the week of July 16th to the 23rd alone, according to this report, which you can get online, U.S. authorities apprehended 6,028 illegal immigrants. 4,152 were from Mexico. Most came from Central America, but some came from Russia, Morocco, China, Cuba, and India. I just can't take it, really. But anyway, this is a funny one. Where, you know, the Homeland Security Department, right? They were formed after 9/11 and all that business. And many people think they've expanded their authority far beyond what was intended. But they had 6 vehicles, these DHS agents, and they were required to seize a Land Rover from a couple in Statesville, North Carolina, due to the fact that the vehicle allegedly violates EPA emission standards. Can you believe that that's part of the mission now of the Department of Homeland Security? They're busy seizing import vehicles that don't comply with safety and CO2 standards or CO2 regulations. Mr. and Mrs. Brinkley bought this Land Rover, $60,000 purchase, on eBay, and they complied with regulations because it fell into the exemption category of a vehicle 25 years or older. In other words, as a collector, I've had a Land Rover. They're very fun to drive. Not the greatest thing in terms of the motor running regularly without problems, but they're probably the most fun vehicle to drive you can have in terms of regular passenger cars. But can you believe that? The Department of Homeland Security, with all the stuff we got going on in the United States, are out seizing vehicles that don't meet emission standards. Wow. I'm sure glad they're taking care of that, right? Hey, I used to live in Collin County, Texas. I live in McKinney, just north of Allen, and Plano, Texas, America's most wealthy city, at least it was at the time when I was there. But Collin County just had a open meeting on the immigration business at their county courthouse in McKinney, Texas. It was standing room only at the county building as people sounded off about housing immigrant children, despite no current plans to do so in Collin County. But they had dumped some, 2,000 in nearby Dallas County. That's the next county down. Commissioners are discussing a resolution that says housing minors suspected of being in the U.S. illegally is not in the best interest of our citizens. There were a couple that spoke out and said the people of Collin County do not turn away children. Of course, they haven't sent any there yet, but everybody says don't force our community, our county, to do this. Do it on our own, says do it on your own, says Hugh Cavanaro. Daryl Rivard of Prosper actually echoed these sentiments too, saying America's dying. Lazy, uneducated, moochers, and parasites have infected this nation, and they're rapidly becoming the majority of people. Another meeting for citizen input is scheduled later. But you're seeing this kind of thing go on in places all over the United States. Let's listen to an Ohio sheriff talk about this. This is Sheriff Richard Jones of Butler County. Listen to what he says. This is a quote. We've got kids that are born in these hospitals, Butler County, to the illegals that we can't afford to pay for. A third of the hospitals, the births here, just in our community, are born for free, and they're illegals. They are having, this is a community north between Cincinnati and Dayton. Can you believe it? A third of these? These are children and the ones that are coming over to our school system. He said he also detailed the impact of illegal immigration on our county schools, saying every kid gets less. Imagine being in a school and you have a classroom with 25 or 30 students. Then you have an interpreter for each of these kids that are sitting next to them. Can you imagine the disruption that causes? He said he talked to people in the school people and they say this isn't record. This isn't going to work. They said it's a total disruption. It comes out of the money that they don't have, and it's killing our school system. But isn't that just incredible? Okay, let's take one last look at something here and see if we can find it. This is about a decision that just was made in Washington, D.C. Yes, and that will come up tonight. With our speakers, it says a federal judge, this article is dated Sunday, July 27, 2014. It says a federal judge ruled that Washington's ban on the carrying of handguns in public is unconstitutional. Good. In a ruling made public Saturday, Judge Frederick Scullin, Jr., said that there's no longer any basis on which this court can conclude that the District of Columbia's total ban on the public carrying of ready-to-use handguns is constitutional under any level of scrutiny. In other words, he can't see how you can restrict this and obey the Constitution of the United States, particularly the Second Amendment. He made the ruling on Thursday in U.S. District Court. The defendant cited in the judge's opinion were the District of Columbia and its police chief, Kathy Lanier. Known Kathy Lanier years ago. She'd been a chief of police a long time, had her come as a feature speaker at the University of Cincinnati a long way back. But anyway, the plaintiffs were four individuals in the Second Amendment Foundation, a group that advocates right to firearms. So the gun thing, all 50 states now allow some form of carrying guns. Some of the states approve Castle Doctrine, the regulations and rules and qualifications to carry a concealed handgun are interesting. I mean, they vary. Some it's very easy. You just kind of go down and get it. Texas has, I had that one about the Texas right to carry law in my book, an article I wrote called The Politics of PAC and the Texas Right to Carry Law Analysis of the Texas right to carry law, and Texas is the most complicated. You got to shoot and reload and shoot and take a written test and go to school for 2 days, and I haven't looked at it lately, but it's very complicated. So anyway, it's a big deal across the country, and keep in mind almost 300,000 people a year use a firearm to ward off a felon. They don't end up shooting them. They just end up pulling it out, and the felon, bright as they are or aren't, they get the word. Okay, that's it for this. Let's go ahead and listen to the Conservative Political Action Conference and their discussion of firearms. And it's going to be very interesting. And I told you who the speakers are. They'll be reintroduced again by Chris Cox. And give me time to set this up. I think you'll enjoy this.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Cox, Executive Director of the National Rifle Association Institute for Legislative Action.
How's everybody doing today? You having a good CPAC? Heard some good speeches, good political speeches? All right, well, I promise you're not going to hear that during this panel. We're going to talk about lawful gun ownership. It's something that could possibly save your life. Maybe it already has. We've got a great panel today, so I hope you enjoy it. Let's start off. Our first panelist spent 17 years in law enforcement before she was elected to the Florida State Legislature and went on to become a member of Congress. She's not scared to stand up to the other side when they attack your Second Amendment rights. Please take a look at this video.
And the last point I'll make, Representative Adams, this is not feel-good legislation. I'm sorry you used that phrase in your statement testimony. I don't feel good about being here today. Mr. Heslin doesn't feel good about being here today. We are trying to make this country safe, and we're giving our best efforts to do that.
And, Senator, I understand as someone who has a husband on the wall at Judiciary Square, but I also understand that the criminals, by their very definition, do not obey the law. So when you take away the guns that people have to protect themselves, law-abiding citizens are left unarmed.
I'm sure you'll now support universal background check to keep the guns out of the hands of criminals, won't you?
No, sir, because that's a flawed system also. If you want to fix that system first, I would love to have an opportunity to discuss that with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the Honorable Sandy Adams.
Thank you so much for being here.
Our next panelist has over 35 years in law enforcement. He currently serves as the sheriff of Milwaukee County, and he's not scared to speak his mind when it comes to the Second Amendment either. Please watch.
Now, let me talk about the two things that have gone on in Wisconsin in the last year and a half that have they've changed the dynamic here. Wisconsin passed the Castle Doctrine law, and that allows citizens to use force up to and including deadly force against a home intruder. The other one is the Personal Protection Act. That's the concealed carry, where you can you have to take some course and pass the background check, whatever, and then you get a permit to carry to go armed with a concealed weapon. I'm trying to leverage those two things to give people, law-abiding people, some options in the interim, in these exigent circumstances, some things to do because the police can't get there right away, and they may not.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sheriff Clark.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Many of you know Emily Miller. She serves as the political director of the opinion page, the editorial writer of the opinion page of the Washington Times. Her book, Emily Gets Her Gun, chronicled the disaster of a situation in Washington, D.C. when it comes to lawful gun ownership. She recently went on with everybody's favorite Piers Morgan and had a little interaction with him, so please watch.
There has never been proven, whether it's the government CDC study, Harvard study, that any gun, all these gun control laws that I hear you advocate all the time, they don't prevent biology decline in violence. And that's what we all want to do, is decrease violence, make our children safer, make ourselves safer, make our cities safer.
But what they do is they dramatically reduce gun crime.
No, they do not. Gun
but
crime has gone down 40% in the past 20 years, while gun ownership has skyrocketed. There's over 300 million guns. As gun ownership has gone like this, gun crime has gone like this.
Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Emily Miller.
Thank you, dear.
All right, so let's just jump right into this. Emily, you had a lot of fun talking to Piers Morgan. Everybody loves watching him get made into a fool, so thank you for doing that.
A pleasure. More than a pleasure.
But you
it's
made a really...
He lost, you know? He's gone. CNN canceled him. He won.
I know it. That's a good thing.
America won, I should say.
But you made a really good point to Piers, and that's that while gun ownership has quadrupled in this country over the last 20 years, violent crime is at a 40-year low. And while that's it shows the fallacy of gun control from a crime-fighting standpoint, it's really not a statistic that makes 1,600 women and girls in this country who are raped every week feel any better, or the 25,000 people who are victim of a violent crime every week in this country. There's still bad people out there doing bad things to good people. I know that you've chronicled the D.C. situation with regards to buying a gun, but what was your reason? What started you down this path of wanting to become a gun owner?
Well, you know, it's amazing to me that I'm sitting on a panel with such honorable people talking about gun control, because I'd never shot a gun before 2 years ago. And I'll tell you, if it was 2 years ago and I was sitting in a seat, I would be worried that the sheriff's gun was going to jump out and shoot me. That's how little I knew about guns. You know, I still had this confusion that the guns acted as opposed to the people. But what happened to me is I was at a friend's house, I was dog sitting, and took the dog for a walk. And to make a long story short, I came back, entered the house, and found someone robbing it, the man. And obviously I surprised him. He was surprised to see me. And I luckily, thank God, was able to talk my way out so I wasn't hurt physically. He took my wallet. And then thinking I was the sheriff, I decided to follow him down the street to get a photo. And turned the corner of the driveway and found two pickup trucks parked in the road and 15 men standing there because they've been casing the whole neighborhood. They obviously saw me and started running at me, and I ran back in the house and then called the actual law enforcement. But going to bed that night, it was the first time in my life I ever thought, I wish I just had a loaded gun by the bed. Because if these guys come back and they want to rape me and they want to murder me, they're obviously on drugs, and that's what the police said. They're in town to get drugs and get money. How will I defend myself? And it just changed my – from then on, I was like, I'm going to get a gun to defend myself. And now, 2 years later, I have a loaded gun by my bedside table in D.C. It took me 4 months to get it legally, but I do have a loaded gun, and I've never felt safer.
Sandy, you have a unique perspective in this, both serving as a policymaker after your career in law enforcement. As you pointed out to Dick Durbin, you suffered through this as well. You lost your husband. I know that there's not only a professional but a personal respect for the Second Amendment that you have. Can you share your thoughts on it?
I think what I said to the senator was accurate. Criminals, by their very definition, do not obey the law. And I have seen it over and over again, whether it was in my professional life as a law enforcement officer or whether it was in my professional life as a policymaker. And the problem is that you can create all these feel-good laws that have no teeth, that will be ignored by the criminals, and the only people you hurt are the law-abiding citizens who have their weapons, their firearms, to protect themselves and their families. So if they really are serious about actually doing something that works, then they need to first enforce the laws they currently have on the books, which they are not currently doing, and look at the other drivers that are causing these violent crimes. I'm happy to discuss that with them, was always happy to discuss it with them, whether it was on the state level or on the federal level, but too many times you see politicians wanting to use this as a wedge issue to divide Americans, when in actuality, it's Americans that they need to be protecting. And by doing so, they need to enforce the laws they currently have. And I hope Eric Holder is listening, because he's one that needs to really do his job.
No, there's no question about that. And I do want to come back to the lack of prosecution efforts, but Sheriff, I'm sure one of the worst parts of your job is having to talk to families, not only victims, but families of people who have been killed by these criminals in your area. I mean, what do you tell these sad families who have gone through these tragedies when it comes to protecting yourself and taking care of yourself when the police can't be there?
Well, if you're right, what do you say? you know, you can't really find words. But Emily said something I think is interesting when she said toward the end of her story that she called the actual law enforcement. And this is what I've been trying to do in Milwaukee County in terms of flipping this equation, because Sir Robert Peel, the father of modern policing, said the citizens are the police are the citizens. So, in fact, she was acting as a law-abiding citizen. I trust law-abiding citizens with firearms. I fear criminals. Right? Now, self-defense is the first law of nature. All right? In order to do that, you have to be prepared. And that's the message that I was sending, not only to the law-abiding people in Milwaukee County, but to the criminal element as well, that we are now going on offense. Okay, with Wisconsin passed the Personal Protection Act, the CCW, and they passed Castle Doctrine several years ago. I think there were like 165,000 people in the first within the first year that applied for those permits. I looked and I said to myself, I got 165,000 people who are prepared to assist me, mm-hmm. in keeping their community safe. Here's why that's important. Because citizens, they want to play a role in their own safety. But when you're going up against an armed individual, you are at a distinct disadvantage. Well, guess what? The perps have something to think about now.
That's right. Sheriff, I appreciate that. And I want to follow up. It's a great discussion on this whole concept of self-defense and right to carry, permit laws, concealed carry. 50 states now allow some process, not all great, but allow for some process for law-abiding people to get a permit to carry and defend themselves. Wisconsin was late to the game. Now you're 49th state. You beat out Illinois, so that's good. But
better late than never.
Better late than never. But what we hear out of the gun control groups, no matter where we push these efforts to allow for lawful self-defense, is that it's going to be a Wild West shootout. Every street corner, there's going to be permit holders shooting at each other over fender bender, and people just aren't trustworthy when it comes to firearms. Have you seen problems in Milwaukee County with good people getting permits, going out and doing bad and crazy things?
No, like I said, I trust law-abiding people. Now, we live in an imperfect world, and I think everybody here knows that. And there are going to be people from time to time that possess a permit or possess a firearm and then use it in a way that they shouldn't, okay? Then we deal with that individual. It's just like if somebody takes an automobile and drives it in a reckless fashion and kills somebody, would you want to take my vehicle away because they did that? So I would flip that around and say, why do you want to take my rights away, which you can't do anyway? But why do you want to try to take my rights away because somebody else acted in a foolish fashion? If somebody went into a theater and yelled fire, a crowded theater, would we be talking about taking your First Amendment rights away because they acted irresponsible? No. What we would do is we would deal with that individual, and they'd have to pay the price.
Well, and you'll hear that, well, eventually it will turn bad. But Florida proves that's not true, because 27 years ago, Florida passed their permit law. 2.5 million Floridians have gotten permits to carry in that state, and 182 have since been have gotten in trouble for doing something with a firearm, 0.00672%. I know you were there in 1987 when it was passed. What do you tell the people who don't trust law-abiding people to defend themselves?
I think that it's a myth that law-abiding citizens are just that, they're law-abiding. And I was a police officer on the streets in 1987, and I remember when the law was passed and everybody was, you know, you had all the hype about how it's going to be so bad and all of this. I didn't see it, and I never saw it. But I do know, and I keep going back to it, that the criminals, by their very definition, are criminals, and the criminal element is who should not have those weapons, whether it's a firearm, a knife. They have different ways of harming our citizens.
That's right. Well, Emily, 50 states allow for some form of right to carry, but the Brain Trust in Washington, D.C., at the city council, actually moved in the wrong direction, and they had a very limited process, and they repealed it. Now, are you just too mean to be trustworthy with a firearm? What is it? Why does D.C., why are they so threatened by you wanting to be able to carry a firearm?
Obviously, the same thing in all the 8 main issue states. It's the same concept that they believe in New Jersey and California and Maryland and New York is that we individuals are not responsible enough to walk down the street and defend ourselves, that giving us a carry permit somehow is going to turn us into criminals. It's so bizarre to me, but that is the mindset. And I've repeatedly asked the city council chairman, Phil Mendelson, how do you just ignore this whole right to bear arms part in the nation's capital? It's kind of clear. I mean, the Second Amendment is not that long. I think they could read it. And he just says, well, you know, we have the White House, we have the Supreme Court, we have all these Capitol Hill and all these important people here in Washington. I make 2 points to him repeatedly. He's pretty sick of me down at City Hall, to be frank. I point out to him, one, those people all have armed guards around them. You, Phil Mendelson, really don't need to protect the president here, right? And number two is, I love the Supreme Court justice, but why is their life more important than mine? I mean, I'm the one who's walking down the street homeless, and I just repeatedly want to point out that we have states who do not allow concealed carry permits. They're called may-issue states, and the Supreme Court, I think, is going to have to take this up in the next, possibly the Drake case coming up, one of these cases, because these may-issue states basically don't give anybody carry permits. And we have a split on the circuit levels now. We've got the NRA Best case in San Diego versus Maryland, New York, these other cases, Woolard in Maryland. And so the Supreme Court's really going to have to weigh in, because the right to bear arms and carry permits is a deterrent. And I think what was really just sort of near you in Detroit, the Detroit police chief, James Craig, recently said he wants people to have concealed carry permits. I mean, and this is Detroit. He said because it's a deterrent for crime, because criminals don't know who they're going to hit, who might actually shoot back, and that's why every year has increasing crime rate. But like over here, over in Virginia, there's no crime, because if they want my iPhone, they're just going to use a gun to my head, because they know I don't have anything but maybe registered mace. But go over to Olestown, someone might shoot back. I mean, it's pretty common sense. We're not. I mean, criminals are stupid and on drugs, but they're not that stupid.
You know, Chris, Emily said something that's very striking. This is my copy of the United States Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. I carry this thing everywhere I go. Okay. And I read this thing once a year from front to back, and it doesn't take that long to read. But as Emily indicated, the Second Amendment is pretty clear. You don't have to be a constitutional scholar to understand this. The Founding Fathers were not constitutional scholars, but they knew what they wanted for the American people. And they said at the end of that Second Amendment, shall not be infringed. What we need to do in this country is we need to get to the original intent of the Second Amendment, stop all this might issue, may issue, shall issue, because that's what complicates this whole thing. Like I said, the armed citizen made this country free. The armed citizen will keep this country free.
Yeah, Chris.
If you could drop that copy of your Constitution off to Dick Durbin and some of the folks up on the Hill, it might. Another thing that's always frustrating when you listen to the Chuck Schumers and Dick Durbins is you watch them when they get sworn in and they put their hand on a Bible and they swear to uphold that document. But they just conveniently seem to forget the parts of it they don't like the Second Amendment, which is always just unbelievably frustrating.
And Chris, you know, and I just want to point out, this issue of the right to keep, the Second Amendment issue and gun rights, it's not about party. Because, I mean, I'm not ready to, Jeff Clark is a Democrat. I'm ready to elect you president at this point. I mean, because you don't hear that, right? So this is not about Democrats and Republicans. This is about Americans, and the majority of Americans believe strongly in the right to keep their arms. They do not want more gun control because they know by example that it's not working. It's just not a party split. It's about common sense, about logic, and what are the statistics. And the statistics show, as you well know, that the more guns there are, crime goes down, or the more permits there are. It's just, you know, people get it. And I just think this is the one issue that does not, you know, cross the party line. Or there are no party lines.
Yeah, and the criminals certainly aren't asking you if you're a Republican or a Democrat before they pull a gun on you. As I've traveled and talked to gun owners across the country, one of the things I hear is not only a fear and an anxiety out of Washington, D.C., that I don't trust these people, they're coming after my freedoms, coming after my rights, but there's a local fear. There's, you know, they pick up the paper and they read about prisoners being released early because of budget cuts, that they can't afford prison guards, or that cops are getting fired over budget cuts, or they can't work overtime, those sorts of things. Sheriff, I'm sure you're not immune to budget cuts. Have you seen 911 overwhelmed? Have you seen the delays get longer? I mean, what's been your...
Sure. Public budgets are under stress right now. We don't have the resources that we'd like to have, but that's the reality of it, okay? I don't whine about that. What I try to do is get people involved, people that I trust, law-abiding people, to help me and allow me to help them keep their community safe. So, I mean, you indicated these things like early release and second chance program, there's this discussion on that yesterday. Those are all great things to have discussions about, but the reality is that violent predators walk through our neighborhoods. We're putting them back into these already stressed neighborhoods, and they could care less about this document. They could care less about your rights. They could care less about what we're going to try to do to keep firearms out of their hands. But I get a kick out of how this discussion always focuses on, and this isn't something that you did, but you asked, how many instances did a law-abiding citizen use a gun improperly? But yet criminals use these firearms, these means, on a daily basis against other human beings, and that discussion never comes up. That's what I said we need to focus on, not the law-abiding citizen, the criminal element.
Thanks, Chris. If I might, this has been a discussion that has gone as far back as when I was a police officer, with budgets for law enforcement, whether it's law enforcement, EMS, firefighters, your public safety. And as our population grows, communities get larger, the criminal element looks at more and more targets, and law enforcement gets strapped. And so the help to law enforcement, as the sheriff rightly said, was having law-abiding citizens help with their protection.
But Cindy, you've been on both sides of the budget.
Yes.
You've helped write them, and you've had to deal with them as a law enforcement officer. How do you prioritize security and safety, which is something that, again, is in that book, is a responsibility of our elected officials?
Well, sometimes I think that gets lost, but that was one of the things that was created by our founding fathers, public safety of our citizens. That is our responsibility as government. So government needs to make sure that they prioritize that. There is no excuse for not prioritizing it.
I want to talk a little bit about this novel concept of gun-free zones, where honest, law-abiding people, once you cross a certain line, you're no longer trustworthy and honest and law-abiding. I don't want to start here. I want to start with this awful, most of you remember this situation in Kenya last year, at the Westgate Mall, where for 4 days there was just tragedy and rampage. It was 172 people. What was it? They killed 72 people, wounded over 200 more. After that tragedy, which unfolded over 4 days, the head of the International Police Agency said, and I want to read this quote, I hope they'll put it up on the screen, ask yourself, if that was Denver, Colorado, if that was Texas, would those guys have been able to spend hours, days shooting people randomly? It makes police around the world question their views on gun control. Where would you have wanted to be? In a city where there was gun control and no citizens armed, if you're in a Westgate Mall or in a place like Denver or Texas? Now, we all nod our head, and it's common sense. Of course, you can't pray hard enough for a good person with a gun to show up,
yeah,
if you're in a situation like that. But then you fast forward to last Saturday with China, where these madmen attacked people with knives, killed 33 people, injured 130 more. And the first thing I thought, I was watching it on the news, and I thought, man, I wish that somebody there had a gun. And then when they said there were a bunch of attackers, I thought, and I hope they have a high-cap magazine, because you're going to need it in a situation like that. But instead of a reflection of course you want an armed response there, I'm not making this up. This is what China recommended to their law enforcement officers. Lion taming sticks. That's not a joke. Lion taming sticks. So, Sheriff, What would your deputy say to you if you provided them with lines in response to something like this?
First of all, it looks like a skit out of Saturday Night Live.
I know, right?
But in seriousness, gun-free zones get people killed. The only person that's safe in a gun-free zone is the criminal perpetrator. You mentioned the key phrase, stop the threat. When the police cannot be there in real time, when the threat is happening, somebody has to be there to stop the threat. All this stuff about hiding under desks, I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that thing. You get to make the choice as to how you're going to defend yourself, but somebody should be there. Somebody has to be there to stop the threat. So that's why I believe, when I made that comment, the armed citizen is what makes our community safe, law-abiding armed citizens. Gun-free zones, and if it's a private business and they want to put up that, they like neon signs. They're saying to the criminal perpetrator, come visit us. That's what it's doing. I don't mind if a private business wants to have that policy. That's their business. But I'm worried about public spaces where they tell me I can't go to a public space, and that's where government makes the call. And so government's making the decision for me and for you that you can't exercise yourself your Second Amendment right, which includes the right of self-defense. That's where I have the big problem is when government imposes those gun-free zones.
And Emily, you've written absolutely. You've written about some of the worst atrocities out there happening in these gun-free zones.
Yeah, and I want to make clear, this is something the liberal media and President Obama will say all the time, mass shootings are on the increase. You know, that's why this whole debate started a year ago after the horrible tragedy in Newtown, which all of us, you know, watched unfold on TV. And, I mean, I know we were all crying. I mean, it's the most horrendous thing you can imagine, six-year-olds. But President Obama exploited up and Bloomberg to just launch this whole year to push gun control. And they will never say this, but it's fact. Mass shootings have not increased. And the Congressional Research Service did a study last April that looked at 30 years. Mass shootings account for, on average, 18 deaths a year. They're horrible, but the reason that they're on TV and the reason that they're all on TV for days at a time is because they're rare. And it would be so much more helpful and honest if the president, after, say, the Navy Yard shooting or after Newtown, came out to people and said, these things are horrible, but you are safe. You know, this is not getting worse. This is what this is. Instead, he comes out and says, this is getting worse. We're having more mass shootings. And to your point, also, I just want to clarify that mass shootings have not increased, but all of these mass shootings that we've looked at in the recent years, except for the Gabrielle Giffords who was shot in Arizona, all of them were in publicly said no gun-free zones. So, and we saw the Aurora shooter went past closer movie theaters to his home to pick the one that was gun-free. We don't know exactly what happened with Adam Lanza. The report didn't show, but there were houses closer to his house that had armed guards. So gun-free zones are such dangerous places. I don't think any parent should allow a sign that says gun-free on the building. I think that's so dangerous.
And there can be an open discussion on, and there should be a vibrant discussion on all of these things, but what we should all agree on is that a sticker in a window that says no guns allowed is not a school security plan. It's not a protection of malls or anywhere else.
I think, would you put it as a sign in your front yard, no guns allowed, gun-free zone?
As the sheriff pointed out,
welcome to
come and rob me with no armed response. And we're starting to run out of time, and I do want to squeeze one more topic in, and that's the hypocrisy that we see coming out of the Mayor Bloomberg's of the world. And then, as Sandy pointed out, the frustration over a lack of enforcement. And I have no problem with Mayor Bloomberg having armed security. Good for him. I have no problem with him hiring his full detail after he left. That's great that he can afford it. I was joking with the sheriff that I carry a gun because you're too heavy to carry. And we don't all have the luxury of hiring personal security. But they want to tell us that it's okay for them, but we're not worthy.
Yeah.
We're not trustworthy, and we're not good enough to be able to defend ourselves. So, Sandy, what do you say to the Mike Bloombergs of the world?
Wow.
We're on TV, so don't really say it.
Yeah, that might bring the police officer out of me. I would say that he needs to really reflect on his decision-making and that Americans have the right to bear arms. It's our constitutional right. It's our Second Amendment right. And
we have a right to defend ourselves. And just because he's wealthy enough to hire his armed guards and he doesn't have to carry, that's his choice. But the rest of Americans who want to carry, who want to protect themselves and their children and their families, they have that right based on the Second Amendment. And therefore, he should not be trying to influence and cause these wedge issues just to do political. And it is. It's definitely political because we're both from different parties, but we both agree that the Second Amendment helps save lives. It helps people defend themselves.
And the good news in this is it's not just law-abiding gun owners. The average people, average Americans all across the country that support this freedom, rank-and-file law enforcement has always supported the Second Amendment. Rank-and-file law enforcement, and there's a police.one survey that was done recently, and 9 out of 10 current and retired police officers support concealed carry laws. You're not going to hear that out of some of the chiefs, but that's the truth. And so, Sheriff, I want to thank you for being willing to come and talk about this today, and Sandy, for your service and for your loss. And Emily, it's always great to spend time with you. And thank you all for staying and listening to us today. Hope you have a great convention. Thank you.
Well, I wish that could have been a little bit longer because those folks have some good insights and they've thought a lot about that's probably the problem with a lot of this about firearms. People don't have any. They don't ever shoot. They've perhaps never used one in their life. And all they get is the media reporting facts and the liberal media adding to the facts and saying that, in fact, guns kill. And in fact, guns don't. They save far more lives, far, far more lives than what happens in terms of them killing people. Guns don't kill, people do. You've heard that line a million times. And I like the background of these folks, of course, the NRA official there. He's up on the facts. And Sandy Miller, the former police officer herself, with a fine background in law enforcement and then also a Florida representative and also a U.S. rep for a while. And David Clark, and, you know, we got a good representation too here. Sandy Adams, you know, is a white woman. Emily Miller looks like she's a white woman. And then you've got white male was Chris Cox, the guy that chaired the panel. And then you've got David Clark, a very articulate sheriff. This is a man that saw through it, and he just so happens to be African-American. And he understands what's going on in some of these. Everybody does, or should. He understands what's going on in some of these inner-city areas in the United States. And it's just terrible, where children grow up in constant fear, and it's the number one cause of death among young black males. And think of the talent that's being lost and the contributions to society those people could make, even the criminals, if they didn't live in that mindset, what they could be doing for us. So it's a real tough issue. But David Clark, I think, happens to be a Democratic sheriff, so he's on a he sounded a little more Republican than I thought, maybe Democrat, but I'll have to check that out. I haven't looked at his background, but boy, he's very articulate on this subject and very unusual in places like Milwaukee. Madison would be the same way, to come out with a stand like that. And I love his idea about the people, citizens are the police. That's how it all started, with the London Metropolitan Police way back in the 1820s, the people are the police. And the more of those that you can gather in your crew to help you sustain the law, keep the law, have people obey the law, apprehend criminals, prevent crime, et cetera, the better off you are. I've never understood these police administrators that don't want citizen involvement with volunteer groups and that type of thing. That wasn't the history of our nation. Our nation was the people are the police. And it still is. And some of the best places in the country to be in terms of being safe are those communities where they are. Well, I think that's probably it for tonight. And what we'll be doing is having a show again next week. And we're going to ask Vera Lynn to sign us off singing We'll Meet Again.
again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Again, don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.